today's theme, turning over a new leaf at Toyota and at the EPA. From APM, this is the Marketplace Midday Update podcast. I'm Jeff Horwich, and it is December 27th. An enormous financial settlement at Toyota. The head of the EPA is leaving. We also can't help but focus on that dang fiscal cliff. This morning, Harry Reid said he thinks we're going over. Great.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
Toyota has agreed to one of the largest settlements in automotive history. Pending court approval, the company will pay more than $1 billion to resolve a class action lawsuit related to unintended acceleration. This settlement goes to those who feel the giant recall of cars a couple of years ago made them lose money on a sale or trade-in of their Toyota vehicle. Here's Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein.
In 2009 and 2010, unintended acceleration problems forced Toyota to recall more than 8 million cars just in the U.S.
It really dragged the company through the mud.
Hans Greimel is the Asia editor for Automotive News.
And it really knocked the company, which had its reputation built on sterling quality, it really knocked that off its pedestal.
To address the problems, the automaker made changes to its floor mats and accelerator pedals. The settlement opens the door for Toyota, Lexus, and Scion owners to receive payments and safety updates. Overall, the agreement could cost as much as $1.4 billion. Greimel says, while that's a lot of money to Toyota, it's more of a fender bender to the company's bottom line.
It's a big chunk of change, but if anybody can afford it and ride it out, it's Toyota.
Company sales in the U.S. this year are up nearly 30%. Toyota still faces wrongful death and personal injury lawsuits, as well as an unfair business practice case brought by 28 states. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
The Obama administration announced this morning the head of the Environmental Protection Agency, Lisa Jackson, is stepping down. This is the time at the start of a second term when many cabinet-level jobs turn over. Jackson says she's ready for new opportunities and more time with her family. The president praised her for making our air and water safer. Scott Tong's a reporter on our Marketplace Sustainability Desk, and he is with me now from Washington, D.C. Hi, Scott.
Good morning, Jeff.
So remind us, Lisa Jackson, where did she come from in the first place?
Well, Ivy League, Princeton-educated chemical engineer. She came into the EPA taking over for an administration headed by an oil man president, as you recall. So she walked in with great expectations from the environmental community, which today is hailing great accomplishments by the EPA under her watch, from, as you said, the climate to the air to the water to automobiles. And not surprisingly, she's perhaps the most vilified regulator in the eyes of congressional Republicans and fossil fuel interests, notably the coal industry. So she leaves a big lightning rod, Jeff.
What were some of the major issues that the EPA wrestled with during her tenure?
Well, think of it this way. The next car you and I buy will have stricter mileage and carbon pollution standards because of EPA rules. The next new power plant in your neighborhood and mine will probably not run on coal because of new EPA rules. The smokestack industries will be belching less soot and mercury in the air because of EPA rules. Now, her friends say one of the biggest moments in the EPA during her tenure was when the agency declared carbon dioxide emissions contribute to global warming and are a threat to public health. A lot of the rules we're talking about today emanate from that. We should also say that in-house, there was some fighting with the White House. A lot of the rules were pushed through despite the White House, which put the climate change issue kind of in its pocket after it failed in Congress.
And give us a sample of some of the unfinished business that she leaves behind.
Well, we haven't talked about fracking yet, right? Hydraulic fracturing, controversial drilling practice. The EPA is doing a big study of whether there are risks to drinking water. That's due out in 2014, so a big fight there. We're also waiting for whether they come out with new rules on existing power plants and regulation potentially of toxic chemicals and of water. Those might be on the way, too. What she also believes behind is a very toxic political environment. Many people inside the agency say it's worse than they can remember. So Lisa Jackson leaves that behind as well.
Thanks for the context. Marketplace's Scott Tong.
You're welcome.
And let's do the numbers. Kind of a slow start in the first hour of trading turned negative in a hurry. At the moment, the Dow is down about 0.75%. The S&P 500 is off about 0.9%. And the NASDAQ is pushing a full percent down for the morning so far. Stocks continue their climb in Japan, though. The Nikkei closed up almost another percent. The change in party power there continues to yield new proposals for economic stimulus. New homes in the U.S. were selling at the fastest pace in November in more than 2 years. The number of Americans filing new claims for unemployment last week hit its lowest level since early in the economic downturn. But we also learned U.S. consumer confidence has taken a dive in the first part of December. And I wonder why that could be. The daily data continues to wash over us, but investors and consumers are waiting for that big kahuna. Will we make or miss the fiscal cliff deadline? Let's sort through our scenarios here with Diane Swonk, chief economist at Mesirow Financial. Hi, Diane.
Good morning.
So let's talk fiscal cliff. What else can we talk about today, really? For weeks, the major indexes have jumped on days when a deal seemed possible. What might investors realistically hope for at this point?
Well, we're coming down to a deadline here, and the best I think we could hope for is some kind of a grand plan outline. I don't think you can get through the details of the alternative minimum tax rate and, you know, what's going to be the tax rate on the wealthy and how is this all going to sequestration going to be paid for. So what you've got is, at best, some kind of an outline of a plan that then we magically solve in the month of January and postpone all the initial pain through January. I do think that is probably going to, they're going to lob it into January. January 3rd, mm-hmm. we have a new Congress coming in, but that's still not going to solve the real problems and the real uncertainty about what our fiscal policy looks like.
So if we do get a deal of some kind before Tuesday, obviously that's better than no deal, I guess, but is that really much to celebrate?
It isn't much to celebrate, and we won't be popping a lot of champagne corks on New Year's Eve with just an outline of a deal and some kind of postponement, because we've got to all of a sudden assume that the gridlock that's haunted this Congress for years now would disappear and dissolve in the month of January and not get to that debt ceiling debacle that we got back to in August of 2011. So I really think it's going to be a very hard period through the month of January of uncertainty and hesitation.
Do you feel, just quickly, that consumers are really beginning to sense this pressure?
Well, the proof is in the pudding. This is a lousy holiday season. Despite the fact that we're seeing layoffs moderate, we saw consumers hesitate. The fear factor has set in. It's starting to set into financial markets. And we're also seeing corporations are saying, we're just not sure how much to ramp up as we go into the new year. Uncertainty and fear and hesitation in an economy that otherwise looks like it's improving. It's like pulling the plug on life support on an economy that could be healing now instead of adding insult to injury.
Diane Swonk, chief economist at Mesirow Financial. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And now let's take the public's temperature on this whole fiscal cliff thing for this week's attitude check.
And the latest poll numbers suggest margin of error.
There is somewhat of a disconnect.
It's conventional wisdom.
Our survey said.
Attitude Check is our weekly partnership with the polling firm Gallup. Editor-in-chief Frank Newport is here as usual. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
How confident are the American people in a deal at this point?
Less confident than they have been, and I think that's one big trend. 50% of Americans say, and this is polling through the weekend just before Christmas, 50% mm-hmm. say they are. Think it's likely, at least somewhat likely, that a deal will be reached. That had been as high as 58% just in the weeks prior to that as we've tracked it. So confidence has gone down at least prior to Christmas. Americans a little less confident than they have been.
And let's talk approval ratings. I'd imagine nobody comes out of this thing smelling like a rose, but who seems to most have the public behind them?
Oh, there's no question that it's President Obama. I've seen many polls which pit him against the Republicans. The way we do it, and he wins, the way we do it here at Gallup is we said, do you approve or disapprove of how President Obama is handling the negotiations over the fiscal cliff? And then we asked that about the Democratic leaders, the Republican leaders, and Speaker John Boehner. 54% is Obama's current approval rating on handling the fiscal cliff, and that's up. Boehner is down there at just about 26%, so Obama has more than twice the approval rating of Boehner. Harry Reid doesn't do actually much better than Boehner, but overall, Obama clearly has the upper hand in these negotiations.
How has his approval rating been generally since he's been reelected?
It's been going up. It was higher after he was reelected in the 50s, but more recently it's reached the highest point we've seen since the year he was inaugurated, 29. We had an approval rating for Obama last week of 58% for 1 3-day period, and that's the single highest rating he had gotten since the summer of 2009. So overall, and we're not sure exactly what that's the result of, could be a rally effect after the tragic Newtown shootings, could be his handling of the fiscal cliff, could be it's a holiday season, but for whatever reason, and Obama's doing quite well at this point.
Do we know if people generally feel that going over the cliff will affect them directly?
Yes. I'm not sure Americans fully understand all the nuances of the cuts and the tax increases, but absolutely well over 6 out of 10 Americans say it will have a negative impact on them personally if we sail over the fiscal cliff. There's a lot of other polling that shows Americans think it will be quite negative on the overall U.S. economy as well.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at Gallup. Thanks, as always.
My pleasure.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
The British government is plowing more public money into kind of a miracle substance, or so it's said, something that's called graphene. It is said to be the lightest, thinnest, and strongest material known to man. It was developed in Britain, and it could revolutionize high-tech manufacturing. From London, here's Marketplace's Stephen Beard.
Graphene is pure carbon, formed in the laboratory into sheets only one atom thick. It's so thin, it's described as only two-dimensional. Incredibly strong, it's also highly conductive. In fact, a million times more conductive than copper. Two Russian-born scientists at a British university won a Nobel Prize for developing the material. The UK government funded the research, and as Finance Chief George Osborne told the BBC, he's putting up more cash to keep the economic benefits of the breakthrough in Britain.
There was enormous competition from places like Singapore and the US to get those two scientists over to those countries. And we had to act very quickly to step in and say, no, you know what, we're actually going to provide funding here in Britain for that activity.
He's handing over an extra $35 million to British universities to develop commercial applications for graphene, which could be patented. There's a huge array of possible uses, from touchscreens to aircraft components. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Winding down here, 'tis the season for best of and year in review lists, and today I bring you a sampling from ESPN's wrap-up of the oddest aspects of this year's baseball season. Todd Frazier of the Cincinnati Reds, for example, hit a home run with a bat that he accidentally let go of mid-swing. The Pittsburgh Pirates hit back-to-back homers in one game that both clanked off the same foul pole. And maybe most significant, 2012 was the year of the no-hitter. This year in the MLB, pitchers threw 12 of them. As ESPN points out, even the Mets got one. So, Merry Christmas to them. And wrapping up, which is a pun which you will fully appreciate and adore in just a moment, some brilliant business minds in Brazil have figured out how to make fast food even faster. A popular burger chain there called Bob's has officially rolled out the edible wrapper. In case you don't believe that, their new ad campaign features customers chowing down on Bob's burgers without unwrapping them and apparently enjoying it. This is clearly a marketing gimmick, and it raises a lot of questions. Among them, do they wear gloves when they hand me my sandwich? That's one that I'd like to ask. Some commentators do point out that edible wrapper technology, were it to spread more widely, could ultimately be better for the environment. That is today's Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Jeff Horwich, and this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.